welcome to Inside the Studio. Inside the Studio is dedicated to podcasting and internet broadcasting, both audio and video. Coming up on today's show, I'm going to talk to you about my podcasting for free challenge and much more. Hello, you're very, very welcome to another episode here of Inside the Studio. This is Inside the Studio episode 20, recorded on the 19th of June, 2013. I am getting closer to the 2-year anniversary of the first ever Talks About Tech episode. I'm just trying to think of some things I can do to celebrate the second anniversary of Talks About Tech. I think it was the 31st of July 2011 is when I started Talks About Tech Weekly Episode 1, and I highly recommend you do not listen to that first episode. It was pretty funny. But you might have heard from that intro. By the way, I am Michael McAndrew, your host, and you might have heard from that intro that I'm going to be talking to you today about my podcasting for free challenge. I'm very excited about it, but I will talk to you a little bit later on my podcasting for free challenge. But to start off, I just want to talk a little bit about a quick update. I have a lot of stuff, by the way, that I want to cover on today's show. I want to talk about a quick update about my computer crisis. I dubbed it my computer crisis because it's like everything broke down at the same time. So it was quite unfortunate, but I have good news to say that my computer crisis is fixed. And not only is it fixed, but a lot of the stuff that I do is improved. So I think I said last week that I had kind of fixed a lot of my issues and that it was running quite smoothly again. It is. But since that episode, I completely reformatted the hard drive completely. I didn't do two separate partitions this time. I just installed clean Windows on it, and it's running really, really nicely. I've also got my media server set up. I was talking about that on Talks About Tech Weekly. So I kind of want to talk about the media. This is, you see, the fact that my computer kind of crashed and got demolished. It didn't get demolished, but the fact that my computer broke down, it kind of gave me an excuse to update some of the things in the studio, even though I kind of updated the studio quite recently. I didn't do a complete redesign. What I did was I rewired a lot of the stuff in the studio because I was getting a new switch, a new 16-port gigabit Ethernet switch for local area network here in the studio. So I kind of rewired a lot of the stuff, and I brought the more powerful computer I have upstairs to do the production. So now I have a quieter and much more powerful computer doing a lot of the heavy lifting. And I'm using my older computer for like Skype and other things. But I have 3 or 4 old computers lying around, and I decided to make use of it. So I decided I was going to take one of those computers and turn it into a media server. So the whole idea behind this was that I produce 2 shows every week, both audio and video. It takes up a lot of space, so I need somewhere to store that. And I decided that I was going to start doing video editing on my MacBook Pro laptop, which I will get to. And because my MacBook Pro laptop only has 1 hard drive, I can't swap in and out hard drives as the hard drives fill up. So it wouldn't make, and I would have to store all my stuff on the primary boot hard drive, which is not very good. So I needed an external way of storing all of my files. So I decided to make this media server. And this media server is, it's just a desktop PC. It's a tower PC. And it's got hard drive bays. I can switch in and pull out hard drives as I need. I currently have a 1 terabyte hard drive and a 2 terabyte, 1 terabyte like kind of internal drive and a 2 terabyte external hard drive over USB as well. And that's a backup. So what I've done is, it's a Windows computer. And what you can do with any Windows computer is you can share certain drives on, if you log into Windows, you can go into Windows and you can share, I might put up a tutorial for this later on, but I won't go into detail on how exactly I set it up. But basically, I'm just trying to get across the idea that I had. I'm able to share from within Windows, share certain disks. So what I did was I shared the drive E, which is my 1 terabyte internal hard drive, and I share my drive F, which is my my 2 terabyte external USB drive, and I can share them on the network. And then what I can do is I can log in from any computer, be it a Mac or a Windows computer or a Linux computer. I can log into that server with those hard drives shared, and I can read and write data. I can read and write data from any computer on the local area network. All I need to know is the username and password for the computer. Once I know those, I can log in and get complete access reading and writing data from those hard drives. So the whole idea is that I'd be able to do all my video editing. What I do is I get a USB stick, take the finished video file off my computer, off my production machine, bring it over to my MacBook Pro, edit it, and then send it over to my media server. On my media server, that's where everything will be stored, and I will upload the show from the media server. So that will leave my MacBook Pro laptop free to do other things while the episode is uploading. So this media server, I do not have plugged into a keyboard or mouse or a monitor or anything. All I have to do is turn on the media server and I can remotely log into it. This is the whole point of it. So what I've done is you can get this, it's built into Windows, or you can download an application on the Mac. It's the Remote Desktop Connection application. So I don't have the media server running at the moment because let me see if I can minimize all this stuff. I've got a lot of stuff, emails open and all that kind of stuff. I've got lots of windows open. But basically, I have Remote Desktop Connection for Mac installed on my MacBook Pro. And let's say my desktop computer or my media server was turned on. I could just put in the IP address of it, whatever it is, and then I could say connect to it. And once I connected to the... Let me don't save that. Once I have connected to my media server, I can, and logged in, I can roam Windows, I can do whatever I want with it, I can remotely do stuff. However, I can copy and paste files, but not by default. So the way that you can do it on the Mac is you can go into Finder, and you can basically connect to a server, and it will allow you to remote the file system there. And it's quite similar on Windows. You just map a network drive, basically. But that's basically what I've done. I don't want to get too technical here on how exactly I set up the media server, but the whole idea is that I have one server. I could have one person editing one show and another person editing another show, like me and Kevin, for example. And we could access the files from the same location. So that's the whole idea behind that. And I can switch and swap hard drives as they fill up and things like that. So that's basically one thing that I improved. I set up an independent media server that can go up. I can turn it on whenever I want and remote access it. And also remote access all the hard drives. The other thing is the MacBook Pro. Yes, I'm using the MacBook Pro as a video editing computer. So the whole idea behind this is I like to do video editing in my bedroom. The reason why is because I have a comfortable desk in my bedroom. I normally do study in my bedroom as well. I have a nice comfortable desk and chair. Whereas in the studio, it's comfortable, but it gets really warm in here. And there's, I don't know, it's the setup is a little bit different. So I prefer to do video editing in my bedroom. I have an external monitor, a Samsung external monitor. And what I've done now is I have that external monitor in my bedroom, and I can very easily connect the external monitor through Thunderbolt into my MacBook Pro. So I have an external display. So now I have two displays. I've got the laptop display and the external display. I've also got a nice little kind of, it's like a riser for the MacBook Pro to rise up the MacBook Pro to my eye level, which is really, really nice as well. And I can do video editing on it. The Samsung display is really, really good quality, 25-inch display. And I decided that I was going to, on the weekend, upgrade my MacBook Pro. So my MacBook Pro had about 4 gigabytes of RAM. I decided I was going to update it to 8 gigabytes of RAM. And then I did a bit more research and I found out that the maximum amount of RAM I could put in this MacBook Pro is 16 gigabytes of RAM. So I was like, hey, what the hell? I'm just going to put 16 gigabytes of RAM in it. And because what was happening is it's a really great computer, but when you're doing video editing, it's very RAM intensive. It takes up a lot of RAM. So you need a lot of RAM. And so what I was finding is the computer was completely freezing up once it started doing video editing. Now I've got 16 gigabytes of RAM in there, 12 gigabytes of RAM allocated to the to a Premiere Pro. It's running super smooth. It's amazing the amount. It's amazing the difference that it makes. This computer is super fast now with 16 gigabytes of RAM. Perfect for video editing. I never did any video editing on a machine with 16 gigabytes of RAM before. The max I ever did it with was 8, and 16 gigs of RAM. Huge difference. I mean, it's super, super fast now. There's no problem whatsoever editing. The encodes are super fast. I highly recommend that you can get them, that you get the most RAM you possibly can if you're doing hardcore video editing, especially for longer shows, because it takes up more CPU and RAM. So this is an i7 MacBook Pro, by the way. So it was a top of the range model. It cost about €2,000 when it was new. It's pretty high end, you know, already. So it's definitely got the CPU and GPU for doing that kind of video editing stuff, but it needed more RAM. So I decided I was going to upgrade the RAM to 16 gigabytes. So that's the main two things that I improved in the studio was, well, main three things: rewiring the studio for better, putting up a media server for managing all of the Talks About Tech files as well as uploading stuff, and upgrading my MacBook Pro and starting to use it for video editing. By the way, I also have an external keyboard and mouse, wireless keyboard and mouse for my MacBook Pro, so it's a really, really comfortable setup. Everything is at eye level for me so that I don't need to strain my back or my neck when I am working video editing and all that kind of stuff. So they're the main three things. Of course, I also upgraded the computer. I brought the computer, more powerful computer, up here to do all of the production stuff. And I think it's working really well. There's still a few little things, like on Talks About Tech Weekly, episode 69, the most recent episode. The recording software I was using was recording the system sound. So every time I switched a camera shot, it would make a Windows noise. It was very, very annoying. But I think that I have fixed that problem now. And hopefully the recording will come out much better. But I just wanted to update you on my computer crisis fix, first of all. The studio is running really nicely now. Everything is kind of nice and tidy again and running really, really smoothly. I made some changes inside in the studio, in the music part of the studio as well, because this doubles up as a music studio, and I've got some nice new improvements there as well. So I've been really, really busy last week, and it was fun, but it's not so much fun when you're like, I've got to do a show right now. I should be doing a show right now, and my computer is in pieces on the table. So, you know, that's not obviously that much fun, but, you know, it's a challenge, and I really love challenges, and I really do love fixing stuff. So it was really, really good fun, and I think that it was all for the better. Everything happens for a reason, I suppose, and the reason this time was to make some improvements, as an excuse to make some improvements to the studio. And it was a shame that something like this had to happen for me to make improvements in the studio, but hey, what can you do? So I just wanted to update you on my computer crisis and a bit of a new workflow system going on here as well. So now I want to talk to you about, yes, what you're probably kind of excited about, because I know I am very excited about this. The Free Software and Services Challenge. So podcasting for, what did I call it? My Podcasting for Free Challenge. So let me explain exactly how this is going to work. The whole idea is that, you know, I've got all of this equipment in my studio. I've got really, really good computers. I've paid a lot of money for software. I've paid a lot of money for basically everything. And what I want to do is I want to prove that you don't need this much stuff to make a podcast. However, I want to, when I was thinking about it, I was like, yeah, how can I prove this? Maybe I could talk about how you can use free services and free software. Sure, I could talk about it, but there's nothing like actually doing it. So I decided that I am going to take up a challenge where for the next few weeks, not starting today, by the way, but starting, I think, hopefully I'll start next week. Starting next week, I will be doing every episode of Inside the Studio for the next few weeks on a different operating system, hopefully, starting off at Windows. And I will be using free software, and I will also be using free services. So, and the whole idea behind doing this is just to prove to you that you do not need really expensive software, really expensive hardware, and really expensive storage and hosting and all that kind of stuff. Now, I'm not going to do it with a terrible microphone. I'm not going to do it with a terrible mixer. I'm not going to do it with terrible hardware. What I'm going to do is I'm going to keep a lot of the hardware that I already have, but I will explain that you don't need that kind of hardware. Obviously, I'm not going to go out and buy cheap hardware because I don't, like, I've bought the expensive hardware. The cheap hardware will do the same thing as the expensive hardware in this case, but I want to prove that you can do it very easily using cheap software and services. So what will I be using? So on week one, week one will be the Windows challenge, the Windows free podcasting challenge. So the equipment that I will have already will be a mixer. This is the Behringer, the Behringer Zenix X2442 USB mixer. That cost about €300. Okay, so it's quite pricey. However, I talked on previous episodes, and I will put links in the show notes to this episode, by the way, for links to a much cheaper Behringer mixer with... I mean, this mixer, by the way, is absolutely huge. Well, for me, it's huge. It's 16 channels, okay? So you definitely don't need 16 channels. It's got, how many? 10 XLR inputs. You probably would need between 2 and 4. So I'll provide a link to a mixer that is about between 100 and €200 for the mixer, and that will do you perfectly, okay? But I will be using this mixer. I will also be using my compressor limiter gate. This is the Behringer Multicom 4600 ProXL. ProXL 4600 or whatever it's called. This is a 4-channel compressor limiter gate. It cost me about €100. And I will be using that as well. I will also provide the show notes, the link to this in the show notes for this episode. Again, it's not necessary, but I will be using it for this challenge. The other thing that I will be using is a computer. I will be using my custom-built most recent computer, which has a Core i7 processor and an NVIDIA GTX 660 graphics card, 8 gigabytes of RAM, and a 500 gigabyte hard drive built into it. It cost me about 800, maybe 870 euro, as far as I can remember. It's about €900 to build the system. And of course, you don't need a computer that powerful. Before this, just put this into perspective. Before, this is a new kind of system that I've had for about 6 months. But last week's episode, I think the last 4 episodes before last week's episode was created on a computer. Let me get this computer for you. Okay, I'm back. This is the computer that I used to use for doing every single podcast episode. It's battered. It's got a pretty terrible processor in it. Basically, it cost me about €350 to build this computer. This computer... I'm going to put that aside for a second here. That computer right there is the computer I was using to run to record every single one of my episodes up until last week. So it's about 3 years old now, this computer. I built it for €350. You do not need, and that's 3 years ago. You could probably build this for about €200 now, even less. So you don't need a powerful computer at all to do this. The only reason why I'm using my custom built powerful computer is because it's the only computer I have to do it. But you can definitely do it on a €200 computer if you built it yourself. It had an AMD processor in it, 4 gigabytes of RAM. I mean, nothing special at all. So I've been doing every episode on that computer. So you don't need a powerful computer at all. So the other thing is a monitor. It's a Dell 20-inch monitor, about €200. A microphone. I'll be using the Samsung Q2U microphone. That cost about €50. It was part of a bundle. Came with headphones and a microphone cable and USB cable and all that kind of stuff. About €50. And also a microphone stand. This is a boom arm stand. It was quite pricey. It was about €50. Again, you can just get a boom stand for about €10 if you want. But this is a kind of a pricey. It's a pretty high quality boom arm. So that was about €50. So in total, the hardware that I'm using comes to about €1,500. However, if you take into account the fact that the computer that you can use is about could cost about 200, well, say 250 euro, 250 euro, 300 euro, we'll say 300 euro. A computer monitor for 100 euro, that's 400 euro. A mixer for 100 euro, that's 500 euro. A Samsung QTU microphone, 550 euro. And microphone stand, 560 euro. So you could do exactly the same as what I'm going to do on the Windows Podcast for Free Challenge for about 560 euro. Just that's the basically equivalent of what kind of hardware I'm going to be using. So 560 euro is basically the equipment that I will be using on the Windows Challenge, which will be week one of my Podcasting for Free Challenge. Obviously, the hardware I'm not counting in is Podcasting for Free. However, all of the software and all of the services I'll be using, apart from website hosting, will be completely free. So, week one of, and by the way, week one, Windows Challenge. The software I'll be using to record, switch, and stream the episode live to the internet will be Open Broadcaster Software. That's OBS at obsproject.com is the website if you want to check that out. This is a Windows-only application, by the way. It's an amazing application. I use it every day. Yes, I do use free software for every single episode that I create. I use Open Broadcaster Software for everything that I do. It's an amazing, amazing piece of software. Highly recommend you check it out. That is the software I will be using for doing the switching, as well as the recording and the streaming. It's got it all built in. So that is what I'll be using for the Windows Challenge. Completely free, by the way, and open source. So you can, if you know a bit about programming, you could contribute to the project and contribute to the software and to improve it and stuff. For editing the show, I will be editing on my Windows computer. I will be using Lightworks for doing editing and encoding, of course. That's at www.lwks.com. That is, I will be using the free version of Lightworks, by the way. I won't be using the pro version, which costs about €50 a year. Won't be using that, just using the free version. So that's completely free. I will be using, now, I won't be creating any artwork, but let's say you were starting your podcast off and you knew a bit about, you know, artwork design and graphics design and stuff like that for maybe creating lower thirds and creating a podcast artwork for your show on iTunes and on your website. There's a fantastic free application and program, very similar to Photoshop, Adobe Photoshop. It's called GIMP, G-I-M-P, and that's open. I think it's open source as well. It's an open source kind of photo editor and graphics design application. I used GIMP for years. I only recently, in the last year, did I get Photoshop. GIMP does basically everything that Photoshop does. The only difference is it's a little bit, the learning curve is a little bit steeper, I think. it's a little bit harder to do some things that Photoshop has one button to do. I think that's the biggest difference. With one button in Photoshop, you can do something that might take 5 or 10 minutes to do in GIMP. But if you're willing to if you're not willing to spend whatever €300 or €400 for Photoshop, then GIMP is a fantastic option. And it's available on Linux, Windows, and Mac, which is really, really great. So there you go. And then let's say you want to create a video intro for your show as well. Well, you could use Blender. Blender is a fantastic 3D video creation software. Again, also open source, available on Windows, Mac, and Linux. Blender will, you will be able to create a video intro and outro using Blender. I have used Blender in the past. It is extremely difficult to use. It is absolutely, it's very, very difficult to use, by the way. I'm just going to put that out there now. There is a very steep learning curve to it. You need to be very creative and you need to learn the software well. But once you do that, it is an extremely powerful, powerful tool. I suppose the paid alternative to Blender in this case would be probably After Effects, although After Effects does a lot of different stuff, but you can create 3D intros, video intros, and all that using After Effects, which is mostly what I use. I suppose Cinema 4D would be the other kind of paid option for instead of Blender, and Cinema 4D is multiple thousands of dollars, and Blender could very easily go into multiple thousands of dollars if it was a paid application. It really is an amazing application. So, just a recap: Xbit Broadcaster for doing switching, recording, and streaming; Lightworks for doing editing and encoding; GIMP for doing the show artwork and graphics, if you want to do that. I won't be using it because I don't need any artwork and graphics. Blender for doing a video intro and outro. Again, I have a video intro and outro. I don't need Blender to create that. Now, hosting. So I'm going to host my video podcast on Blip.tv. Blip.tv is a free, it's kind of like an online original web series service, and I will host my episode of Inside the Studio every week on Blip.tv, which is free. You can sign up there at Blip.tv, and I will use archive.org for storing the audio podcast for Inside the Studio. By the way, you don't have to use Blip.tv at all. You can just use archive.org. Archive.org will accept video and audio podcasts or audio video and audio files, and you can store them up there no problem, completely free. It's the Internet Archive, and that's the whole idea behind it. It's supposed to be completely free for anybody to upload audio, video, text, books, ebooks, or anything like that. It's supposed to be just free for anybody to be able to put that kind of content up there and store it on the web. So, as I said, website hosting will be the only service I pay for. I think I pay about €10 a month for hosting, which is quite expensive. That's because I have the highest plan, but obviously I don't even need the highest plan. But that's what I'll be basically, the only thing I'll be paying for week one, which will be the Windows challenge. So, you know, in many ways, I'm looking forward very much to taking the challenge, because it is a quite a big challenge, and I've been doing quite a lot of research into the software that I will be using. I'm pretty sure in the Windows challenge I'll be using Open Broadcaster Software, Lightworks, and I'll be, of course, uploading it to Blip.tv and archive.org. And the Windows challenge, I think, will be quite easy, and I'm really looking forward to doing it, but at the same time, I'm seeing all these icons here on my MacBook Pro. I won't be allowed, next week, I won't be allowed to touch Premiere Pro, or After Effects, or Adobe Audition, or Photoshop, or Illustrator, or Media Encoder. I won't be allowed to touch that. I have to completely rely on free software, and I am super excited about doing that. I'm really, really excited about taking this podcast for free challenge. It's not really podcast for free. It's like low, low cost podcasting. and using completely free software and services. Okay, so week two will be the Mac challenge. Yes, I'm going to, what I'm going to do is week one will be Windows. Week two will be Mac. And I do have a MacBook Pro laptop. So I will be doing inside the studio on a laptop. It's going to be crazy. I will be doing that. And it's going to be quite interesting to see exactly how that works out. I'm not too sure. I'm a little bit skeptical. So the hardware that I will be using, by the way, will be the equivalent of that 560, well, you subtract 300 euros, so 260 euro, okay, for all of the equipment, excluding the hard, excluding the computer. Now, my MacBook Pro, I've put about 2,300 euro into it now. So that's how much it cost, including that 16 gigabytes of RAM, about 2,300 euro. So it was actually a pretty good price, and the RAM was about 120 euro for the 16 gigabytes. So 2,300 euro for the computer. That's an extremely expensive computer. Of course, you don't need that. But if you're going to be using a Mac computer, it's probably because you already have a Mac computer. They're very, very expensive computers. They come at a premium. The cheapest Mac computer that you can buy is about 600 euro. That's the Mac Mini. Great, great computer. And you could definitely do an episode off a Mac Mini as well. So let's say we included a Mac Mini in the price. So that's the Mac Mini, which is 600 euro, plus the Behringer USB mixer, which is about 100 euro, we said. Samsung QTU, 50 euro. So we've got 750, and the mic stand, 760. So the Mac, the hardware equivalent for what I'll be doing for the Mac challenge will be about 760 euro worth of equipment, including the computer and everything. So that's how much hardware I'll be spending. Of course, I'm actually going to be using higher-end hardware, but basically the equivalent is what you would need to do this challenge. So what kind of software and services will I be using for week two of the podcasting? I'm going to call it low-cost podcasting now. low-cost podcasting challenge. For doing video switching, I will be using CamTwist. CamTwist is fantastic free software. You can plug in cameras, webcams, you can play videos, you can do all that kind of stuff. It's exclusively on the Mac. That's what I'll be using for switching. However, with CamTwist, you cannot record and you cannot stream. There is just a kind of a virtual output from CamTwist to go into other applications. I will be using QuickTime Broadcaster for doing the recording. So I can record locally using QuickTime Broadcaster. It'll save it as an .mov file for me to edit. I will also, I will be live streaming directly using Livestream's web interface for doing the live stream, because I use Livestream.com for doing my streaming. I will probably be using iMovie for doing the video editing and encoding. iMovie comes standard for with every single Mac, and I will be using that for doing all of the editing and encoding. This is going to be quite interesting to see how exactly it works out. It'll definitely be interesting using iMovie, and I'm excited in using free software again. GIMP for doing artwork and graphics. And I will also be using, obviously, you could use Blender for doing your video intros. GIMP and Blender are all cross-platform on all three main platforms. Blip.tv, Archive.org for storage again. And by the way, the link for CamTwist is camtwiststudio.com. Of course, all of the links to every product I talk about or service that I talk about on this episode will be in the show notes. You can go to, I'll make a link, talksabouttech.com/ITS/20 if you want to see the show notes for this episode. But so again, CamTwist for video switching, QuickTime Broadcaster for recording, the live stream web interface for doing the live stream, iMovie for editing and encoding, and that's basically what I'll be doing for week two, the Mac challenge. The Mac challenge is definitely a little bit more difficult, and that's because typically what I use is a combination of Windows and Mac for doing, I do Windows for recording and streaming. I use Mac for editing, encoding, etc. And basically everything else. Because I find Windows is better for doing, there's better software available, I think. Or at least for me, I'm more familiar with doing Windows for the production side and using Mac for doing editing side and basically everything else. So, Mac was a little bit different. It was a little bit more difficult. Because, you know, to try and find a solution. It was a little bit more difficult to find free software. Because a lot of the software available on Mac, you pay for. It's a lot harder to find free software on the Mac. But it is doable, and I will be doing that in week dos. Week two of the low-cost podcasting challenge. I'm still going to call it free podcasting challenge because we'll be using free services and software. Week three, I hope, will be the Linux challenge. I will be using a Linux distro, probably Ubuntu, maybe Fedora or Mint or something. I might use Kubuntu. Kubuntu, if you don't know, is like a, yeah, there's like a media package of Ubuntu that gives you, that comes preloaded. I think it's Kubuntu. I still have to do some research, more research into this, but I've been doing more research into the Linux challenge, and you might have heard the, hopefully, I'll be able to do a Linux version. I've been doing a lot of research into the solutions available in Linux, and, I'll use the Ubuntu. There's a special kind of a distribution of Ubuntu that comes preloaded with video editing software, audio editing software, video and audio production, media production software built into it. However, it doesn't have video switching, video recording, video streaming software built into it. That's what I was looking for. I've been doing this research. It's very, very limited in terms of the software available. And in terms of doing video switching, recording, and streaming, like what Open Broadcaster Software does, you're limited. Webcam Studio, I think, is the best. But being honest, you know, it's nowhere near Open Broadcaster Software or any other solution on Mac or Windows. It will do the same job. Mostly, the interface is quite confusing, though, and I think that's the best. DV Switch is there as well as FreeJ. They're the three I was looking at, and FreeJ looks it may do the job, but of course I'm going to be doing more testing. I'm going to put the install on my computer. And I'm going to start messing around and doing testing with all of the software. I have not even touched that yet. I'm still in the planning stage. So I don't know if I'll be able to do the Linux challenge. Obviously, I have to do more research, but I hope I will be able to. And so I was doing a little bit more research into why it's so limited. And that's because it's very difficult to write an application for Linux to do it multimedia. It's quite difficult. The tools, the software there for developing an application for multimedia is very limited. And I want to actually look more into doing development for Linux and how difficult it really is. But apparently it's quite hard to develop a multimedia application such as Webcam Studio for Linux. It's supposed to be very difficult. And that's basically why everybody uses Macs or Windows computers for doing production stuff. I mean, with Windows, it's very, very easy to create a video switching, recording, and streaming application. It's built into, you know, you can just use DirectX, Mac, Apple scripts, and you've got Xcode there. It's very, very easy. Whereas Linux, it's a lot more difficult. And I think that's with a lot of applications. I think the what Linux is suited to is command line type, server side type stuff. It's not really, I don't think it's suited as much to interface type, multimedia type stuff. And that's why Linux isn't really that popular for doing multimedia stuff. But Lightworks Beta is now available. There's an open beta now of Lightworks available on Linux. So, I'm not quite too sure what video editing software I'm going to use on Linux yet. Video editing software, I had much more success. I could use Lightworks beta, but since it's a beta product, maybe not. Well, Open Broadcaster software is a beta product too, but it's pretty stable. I'm going to try out Lightworks beta. There's apparently a lot of stuff that doesn't work on Lightworks beta for Linux. I'm going to try it out and see. Obviously, again, I'm in the testing stage, but I think I might use PITIVI. I think it's PTV. For doing video editing. I'm going to try it out. It's an open source video editing program. I'm going to try that out. It looks pretty nice. It looks pretty good. So I'm going to try out Lightworks or PTV. Haven't made up my mind yet. Again, I've got to go testing. Again, GIMP, Blender, all cross-platform, and Blip.tv and archive.org for doing storage. Okay, so that pretty much wraps it up. So I'm really excited about this. I'm really confident in the Windows Challenge next week that I will be able to do the Windows Challenge. There are still a few obstacles in my way. Open Broadcaster software, few little software tweaks that I'm going to have to make, I think. I will talk about that next week to see if I've made my way around that. Mac, I think, is going to be harder, but still quite doable. I will be doing it on a laptop, so it's going to be an extra challenge, but I think I will be able to do it. Quite excited about that. For week two. Week one, Windows. Week two, Mac. Week three, Linux. You know, I'm so not confident about this Linux challenge that I don't even know if I'll be able to do it at all. It's gonna be difficult. I don't even know if any of the software for doing video switching or anything supports HD, so I'm gonna be doing an SD. An SD episode this for week three. It's going to be interesting to take these challenges and see how close I can get to the production values I have now. You know, I think my predictions are Windows Challenge, I don't even think you'll notice. You'll probably barely notice any kind of a difference in the production values or production quality of the show. The Mac Challenge, I think, again, you probably won't tell much of a difference in the production quality for the show. You probably will tell a little bit more of a dip in the production quality on Mac Challenge. But Linux Challenge, I don't even know if I'll be able to do it. So it's going to be interesting. So, and by the way, you might be wondering now, well, why are you using paid software if you can get away easy with free software on the Windows side? Well, the answer is quite simple. Convenience. So, I do use free software such as Open Broadcaster software, but in conjunction with OBS, I use XSplit Broadcaster. I use XSplit Broadcaster for handling the stream and OBS for doing the recording. It's convenience. It's easier to use. I think XSplit has its advantages and disadvantages, pros and cons. XSplit Broadcaster also has its pros and cons. I think they work the best together. By the way, XSplit is a paid program. You can get a free version, but it's a free trial. It's very, very limited in what it can do. Although it is an unlimited trial, it's very, very limited in what you can do. So I do pay for XSplit Broadcaster. And that's what I use for managing my stream, because I find that it has a very, very high quality streaming features built into it, whereas OBS got still very limited streaming features built into it. So that's basically why I'm using, and that's the first thing that I'm paying for XSplit Broadcaster because it's convenience. It's a little bit better, but the Adobe Creative Suite, again, it's convenience. I mean, Adobe Audition has some great audio processing stuff in there that I can use for doing compression and, you know, beefing up my sound and all that. But I can do the same thing on Audacity. In Audacity, by the way, Audacity is free, open source, and cross-platform also. So I can use Audacity for doing audio processing on both on Windows, Mac, and Linux as well, by the way. So I probably will use Audacity for doing processing. That's, again, completely free. But Adobe Audition, I think it's really easy. It works really well with Premiere Pro. The interface is really easy to use. It's convenience. I'm paying for convenience. And if you would rather spend little money and spend a lot of time to learn something, I think the free way is good to go. But if you feel that time is money and that it would be a better investment for you to pay invest a little bit of money to save time, then you should look at paid solutions because they're much easier. And that's what I've done. I started off in the free solutions and then I realized how much time it actually took. And I slowly started to buy stuff and slowly began to save up for more equipment in the studio to make my life easier. But it was a slow process. I've been doing this for nearly 2 years now and I've basically built up my equipment and software and services and everything that I use over that 2 year period. So, that went on a little bit longer than I expected. I want to now go on to talk about the Livefire Comments plugin. And this is kind of a hard transition. It's a completely different kind of thing to what we were just talking about a minute ago, but I talked a few episodes back about comments and why I decided why I had comments disabled on my website and why I have now enabled comments on my website. And I talked to you about how I was going to use Akismet for kind of moderating the comments that come in and trying to filter out all of the spam comments that get sent on my website. I found out then that Akismet, although it's free, it's only free. And I thought, you know, you could just kind of donate as much money as you wanted to. If you wanted to use it, if you wanted to kind of donate to Akismet because it's a free program and all that. Turns out if you have any advertisers on your website, any affiliate links or anything on your website, you're supposed to go with a business account of Akismet. And that costs a lot of money per month. So I decided, you know what? It'd be wrong for me to continue to use Akismet. So I decided I was going to disable Akismet and go with a recommendation on using the Livefire Comments plugin. So what is Livefire? Well, Livefire is a free comments plugin for WordPress. You can just go to the WordPress depository and look for the WordPress plugins depository and look for Livefire. That's, by the way, Livefyre. I will also provide a link in the description to Livefire. Free plugin. What it does is it replaces, if you know the standard kind of comments box in WordPress, if you go down to the bottom of a post, you can create a comment. It's just put in your email address and name or whatever and type in your comment. It's very, very straightforward, very simple, and limited, I think. What Livefire does is it replaces the standard comment box with the Livefire interface. It's a much kind of a, it's got a lot more features. It's a lot more social integration built into it. It's got a lot of nice things. The interface is much nicer. The design is much nicer. Really, really nice design. And completely overrides the standard comment system, which I think is fantastic. It'll also integrate social networks for you. So people can comment on social networks and it will go on to your site. So they can bring their comments to social networks like Facebook, like Twitter. So people on social networks can also see what they're commenting on my website, which is really, really cool. Another really nice feature. You have to sign in. You have to like create a Livefire account or a OpenID account or a Facebook account, Google Plus or Twitter or LinkedIn account. If you have any of those accounts or create any of those accounts, then you'll be able to comment. But you need to use one of those accounts. And this is, you might think, a little bit annoying, right? It's actually a fantastic feature because that will put off a lot of spammers because the spammer has to have an ID. So if So they have to have like a Twitter account associated with them, or an OpenID account associated with them, or a Livefire account associated with them. So if they spam something at you, you can very easily check out their account, report it, right? So it's much easier to report a spammer. And it also, it puts off most of the spammers because they, puts off most of those spammers because they see this and they're instantly turned off. You know, I don't want to have to sign in with my Twitter account, or my, I don't want to create a Livefire account because I don't want to be traced back to my Livefire account and then reported. So I think this is a great deterrent of spammers. Really great. Another feature with Livefire is it's got a text editor built in. So it's, you can do bold, italic, links, underline. You can basically do what you could do like Microsoft Word, for example, or like a text edit type software right from comments. I think this is really, really cool as well. Another thing is Live Listeners feature. Live Listeners allows you to have like real-time conversations with people. The reason why is because at the very top of the Livefire comments box, it tells you how many people are viewing that post at this moment in time. So it shows you the number, however many people it would be. And if you get a, if someone types in a comment and you see it was like 30 seconds ago, you could type the comment back and in real time. So you could like have a real-time conversation of comments. And you can also take this to social networks. So you could be having a social network conversation that is directed to the comments section on your site from one person to the other in real time, like an instant message type conversation. So this really allows for instant conversational, very easy method of interacting with people using comments. Whereas normally with comments, a comment system, the standard comment system, it takes a while for the comment to go through. It's not really real time. So Livefire really does improve that. You can also embed media. So you could embed like a YouTube video or any kind of video or audio file or anything. So for example, you could, if you wanted to put in video feedback to the show, you could upload the video to YouTube and then send the link in a comment on the post. It'd be just such a cool way of sending in listener feedback or anything. Just comment with the link to whatever video or audio file you have for the show. And that's just super cool. Another super cool feature with Livefire. It's also got a comment editor. So if you log in with whatever social account you have or Livefire account, it associates every comment you make with that account, and you can edit the comment after it's published. So you publish the account, you publish the comment, and you realize that you made a typo. You can go in and edit the comment and correct the typo. Really, really cool stuff. So I am happy to say that I have disabled Akismet. And by the way, Akismet doesn't do anything like what Livefire does. It doesn't change the interface at all. All that Akismet does is prevents spam. Just prevent spam. I've disabled Akismet because Livefire has a lot of what Akismet can do built into it. I do have to say, I have received spam since disabling Akismet. However, it has been flagged as spam. I have not got any spam since. It was just kind of at the beginning of once I disabled Akismet. Since then, I've had no spam. So it's working really, really great. And I have confidently disabled Akismet and I'm not receiving any spam, which is great. So I would highly recommend that you check out Livefire, the Livefire comments plugin. Livefire, actually, they do a number of different kind of, they do two products, I think. They do, let me see here. They do the comments plugin that you can install and use on your WordPress site. They've also got the Livefire streaming hub. It's basically, it's more targeted towards, you know, television networks, large publishers. It's kind of more for large companies with social media strategies and things like that. But the Livefire Commons plugin is free and it's really, really good. So, you know, again, I've kind of already talked about why you might want to enable comments on your blog, you know, to try and stimulate conversations, try and get conversations going and get interaction about your show going. And I would really highly recommend for you as a listener, or viewer, of course, to go over to, once this show is published, go over to the post page and leave a comment. I would love to hear a comment from you. It doesn't matter what it's about. Even if it's a comment about just saying, I've been listening, that I'm here. Because I love to hear from listeners and viewers like you of the show. And I would absolutely love, you could just leave a comment to say that you listen or view the show and how long you maybe been listening or viewing the show for. I would be super thankful. And I want to actually thank every one of you right now for listening or viewing this episode, because I extremely appreciate every single one of you who tune into this, to every episode of the show, or even if you're a new person. I really appreciate every single person who is tuning in to this episode of Inside the Studio. I really do appreciate it. And do leave a comment. I will put the show notes up at talksabouttech.com/ITS/20, as I said already. You can visit the page, and please do feel free to leave a comment about anything, just to say that you're here, because I always do love hearing any emails that I've gotten. I love hearing from people who watch or listen to the show. So there you go. I'm trying to get interaction with listeners and viewers. I'd love to hear feedback about the show as well. Anything you have to say, I would love to hear it. And you can leave a comment using the live fire comment system. Also, you could even leave a comment to give your opinion on live fire, you know, and if you like it or not, because at the end of the day, it's going to be you, the listeners and viewers of the show, that are going to be using live fire as a system. And if you don't really like it, maybe give your opinion on it. And, or if you do really like it, give your opinion on it. And I'd love to hear about it, because, you know, because you're going to be using it yourself. So, I really would love to hear your comments, and I'm really looking forward to that. So you can go and you can check it over there at the Talks About Tech website, talksabouttech.com. And that's the wrong intro. There we go. I never get the outros right. I always press the wrong music. But that wraps it up for another episode of Inside the Studio. I had really great fun for episode 20 of Inside the Studio. You can follow me on Twitter and the network on Twitter. Talks About Tech 1 is the Twitter account. For the network, I kind of I keep stuff updated there up on the Twitter sphere. I put out, you know, when the shows are released, and just random stuff that's happening with my life. There's a lot of funny stuff that happens in the life of Michael McAndrew. You can also send me an email. Michael@talksabouttech.com is my email address for any questions regarding podcasting, anything. That is where you can pretty much contact me. Of course, you can leave a comment on the new live fire comment system, and add me to your circles on Google+. That pretty much wraps it up for another episode of Inside the Studio.